calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania has bitten the dust. London calling. See, we ain't got no... Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I am Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today will be David Hulley. In this episode, we will be discussing the extremely disappointing 3-0 loss performed against Leeds United Wednesday night at Craven Cottage. I've watched back this today, I listened to it, and I'm still shaking my head trying to figure out exactly what happened at Craven Cottage last night. We're going to go through all of the moments, you know, all of our thoughts on this match, and I'm sure we both have a great deal to talk about when it comes to this unfortunate loss. And I'm going to bring on my co-host right now. David, how are you doing, my friend?
Hiya, well, yeah, it's one that makes you want to pull your hair out because it's very frustrating. It's one thing when you lose because you played badly, but when you lose after creating so many opportunities and having, you know, probably the lion's share of the play still, it is very frustrating. But for me, it's at least it was a positive, the fact that we were creating chances, something we haven't been doing a lot of lately. So, a small positive in a kind of an otherwise very disappointing night, of course.
Yes, listen, you know, it's difficult. This one's difficult because I was talking to you offline about certain matches that I've seen in my lifetime that would be similar to this. I had mentioned to you that this reminded me of the Crystal Palace victory for Fulham, not the scoreline, but more to do with the fact that, you know, again, Fulham took advantage of their opportunities, and I thought the scoreline for Fulham flattered them a little bit in that victory, David, on the road last season at Crystal Palace. You actually brought up a very good one. I think it's a better comparison would be Derby County playing QPR last year in the playoffs, you know, at Wembley. You know, again, that was a game that again, if you watched it and you're thinking to yourself, how did Derby County not win that? And they, you know, again, they created so many opportunities and they controlled the play, and it just did not go their way. This match was similar to that, you know, but again, David, I'm still shaking my head. So let's get going on this, and just share with me what you witnessed at Craven Cottage last night, just your overall thoughts on it.
Well, in the main, you know, Fulham did okay. I mean, they created quite a few opportunities, and there was, especially first half, it was a fair balance of longer balls played more directly to Smith with looking for knockdowns and actual play on the ground. You know, we played some good football on the ground in the first half, really. And, you know, I suppose you could say that our lack of goal scoring was down to, there was some good goalkeeping, some excellent saves. There was some bad luck, you know, hitting the post and things like that. And there was a few when the finishing should have been better. I think I saw a stat that Matt Smith had about 13 shots on his own. On another night, he would have bagged a hat-trick. I'm not going to be too critical on him, but there were definitely a couple he should have done better on, I think. And there's a couple he was unlucky on those. And there were some good saves. So it was a mixture of that. But, you know, we shot ourselves in the foot after, you know, being on top. And I wouldn't say our heads dropped, because we did still come second half and try to, you know, get something out of the game. And we could have still got something out of the game almost. It wasn't like our heads dropped, but certainly there was a fragility after that happened, because we left ourselves more vulnerable. And, of course, with 10 men, we was always going to be more vulnerable on the break, I guess. But it's a game, when you look at the stats, you have to say, you know, why didn't we get anything out of the game? You know, if we'd have got a draw, you would still be saying, you know, really, we should have got a win out of that.
Absolutely.
So, I think, you know, obviously the scoreline flatters Leeds in terms of the balance of play, but I don't think Leeds were that great. I think they're okay, but we've seen much better teams at the Cottage this season, I would say, and absolutely a case of 3 points drop there.
Absolutely, David. Listen, you brought up a good point. Again, I'm not trying to take away anything from Leeds, because, again, they took advantage of their opportunities and they scored and they get all 3 points. Fine. Congratulations to Leeds United and their supporters. But the bottom line, you just nailed it. You know, again, we've seen Bournemouth, you know, Bournemouth looked much more threatening at the Cottage, obviously. You know, Watford, you know, ran all over us at the Cottage. And what I watched today, what I listened to, and what you probably saw as well, was not a team that again, really had that many opportunities, just took advantage of them. Again, they were very opportunistic. You have to give them credit for that. But I don't think that they're – I don't know, David, you know, maybe, you know, of all of the opponents, maybe they're in the middle of the pack of the teams that have come to Craven Cottage this year. But, you know, again, they took advantage of their opportunities, and they get the victory. That's the way I look at it. I'm frustrated because, again, watching back at it was even more frustrating because you see it. You know, you see the opportunities. You see the bad luck. We'll call part of it bad luck. Part of it, really good goalkeeping. We're going to talk about Silvestri because he did an excellent job. And like you said, you know, part of it is also on Fulham for not taking advantage of their opportunities and really good scoring really good scoring chances. Maybe they should have done better. You were using Matt Smith as an example. It's a combination of everything thrown together, and it just did not go our way. I've seen matches like this and games like this in other sports often, David. But I thought this was even a little bit freakish to the level that this match turned out to be, because this is totally flattering to Leeds United. You know, give them credit for the victory, but they shouldn't have won this match 3-0. And David, like you said, you know, I think Fulham should feel that they should have not just got a draw out of this, but that they should have won the match, David.
Definitely. I mean, The difference is, you know, the economy of chances, though, that, you know, they got most, you know, that they got the majority of their shots on target.
Yes.
Ours was, you know, it was massively the difference. I think we had 8 on target out of 27, and they had, was it 5 on target out of 8, something like that? So
Yes. You know, Leeds United were at 62%, David, which is real good.
Mm-hmm. So that's obviously the main difference between the sides, I guess, there.
Right. You know, and again, that's a stat, and when we go to a stat attack, that's one thing that definitely stands out. And then, of course, if you look at the flip side, Fulham shooting accuracy was at 26%. So again, 62% to 26%, you could have all the shots you want in the world, and there were a ton of them, like you mentioned, David, 27. But you need to connect on a few of them, and the opportunities were there. And there's a combination of reasons, like you just mentioned. But let's get started and really break down this match. And let's start with the starting 11, David. I want to get your thoughts on the starting 11 when you first saw it an hour before the match.
Well, it wasn't my starting 11, but I was pretty sure when I saw the players that it would be my starting formation. You know, effectively the diamond again, or what I predicted it would be anyway. And it's kind of, I wouldn't say it was my formation because you know what I think about the diamond and the problems it causes us. But I've kind of come to expect that's what's going to happen, you know. And the way it actually was written down, it almost suggested it was going to be a 4-4-2, a bit like Yanis had suggested, you know. In this case, it would have been Hoogland and Ruiz White, but I just didn't see that happening really. And I don't think that would work with Ruiz. I know Yanis suggested it the other day, but I don't think he's a wide player. He doesn't offer us the qualities for a wide player. So it was the formation I thought it would be. I had expected, though, maybe to see Fofana get a starting place after his promising cameo at Hillsborough. Obviously, Matt Smith and McCormack up front, same back four as at Hillsborough. So really, I suppose it was... I didn't quite think Hoogland might come in. I thought they might not play him, but it was the formation, so it wasn't too far off, I suppose, what I said. So I thought, yeah, this is kind of what I come to expect, really, with this. And we did obviously have potential to be strong in the centre of the park, because which we identified that we'd need to be strong in the centre of the park.
Right.
You know, with three effectively more defensive players in Tunnicliffe and Parker and of course, Hoogland playing in those positions. So I thought, yeah, we could be strong in the middle here, and that might allow Ruiz to do his bit. And it just would be whether we can get the fullbacks forward to put some crosses in, rather than just having to play sort of long balls forward. But no, I mean, I wasn't too unhappy with the starting lineup. It's, as I say, it's I kind of you know, I kind of thought what Kit's going to do here. It was almost obvious from what he said in his pre-match thing that he was going to switch back to, you know, his kind of favourite system, that after the brief change up at Hillsborough to try and sort of counteract the pitch, and also because he didn't have Brian Ruiz to pick, that he could actually play a 4-4-2.
Now, listen, it's very interesting. You know, when I saw the starting 11, the one name that surprised me was Tim Hoogland in midfield. But, listen, I think it worked out fairly well. Like you said, this was the strength of Leeds United, was central midfield. And I think the way that he set them up for this match, David, worked very well. You know, and like you said, Brian Ruiz, especially in the first half, played fairly well. And I think that the way that Kits, you know, again, we can argue about the diamond, but the lineup itself, I thought was positioned correctly, you know, in, you know, all over the pitch. I think, you know, again, now looking at it, when I first looked at it, my only question was Hoogland, but then like you just mentioned, I was thinking about the strength of the team. So then it does make sense. It definitely made sense. So I was really okay, like you, with a starting 11, and I figured it was going to be a diamond. All right, David, let's get into this match, and we have many key moments to talk about, and it's going to start off pretty much from the very beginning. We're going to go right to the 6th minute because Fulham are really starting off strong. I mean, real strong. And there's a shot here by Ross McCormack, really nice shot, saved by Marco Silvestri, the goalkeeper for Leeds United. And again, this is a situation where it was a ball up to Matt Smith, just to remind you, David, and he couldn't quite get it, but it just happened to land right to McCormack. This is actually a top opportunity, and I guess I have to give credit to Silvestri because this was a golden opportunity to get on the board real early, David.
No, it was. I mean, I guess in that position, McCormack maybe could have done better. Maybe he would be wanting to score, but you can't take anything away from the keeper as well. It was, you know, it was a little bit of an angle, if I remember rightly, sort of 45 degrees, but still, it wasn't that far out from goal. So, you obviously got to be hitting the target and making the keeper, you know, earn his money. And I suppose at least we did do that much. But, this was kind of typical of the evening. There were so many balls played to Matt Smith, and I think he won literally everything in the air. And also,
yes,
he was, you know, in most cases, he directed his headers really well, you know, to find a Fulham player, whether it's sort of backwards or forwards. And it was just so near but so far on many occasions that he was getting heading the ball down right into someone's path, and someone was just getting a block in or something like that. And on this occasion, to say the ball fell really nicely for McCormack, I think he did, you know, more or less the best he could have done. But the keeper was equal to it.
He was, David, and that's going to be a theme here because we've already talked about Marco Silvestri, who I think had an excellent night, the goalkeeper for Leeds United. And this was the first of several saves that he made. And, you know, again, Fulham really looked dangerous very early on. That's in the 6th minute. I'm only going to go up a few more minutes in the 9th minute, David. This was a little bit of a speculative shot from Brian Ruiz from distance, but he had to make Silvestri make the save. Talk about this, because, again, I thought this came a little bit out of nowhere, but Ruiz actually got this shot on target.
Well, it was actually a chip, I think, wasn't it? He tried to chip him. It wasn't so much he blasted it. He was quite a long way out, but he saw the keeper slide off the line. He tried to chip him, and I think, yeah, it was probably going in. Keeper had to scramble it out from under the bar and put it behind for a corner.
Right. You know, exactly. You know, it's funny because now thinking back about the actual opportunity there, it was more of a chip. He was trying to take advantage of the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper got back in time to make the save, and then of course, like you mentioned, we have a corner, and then again, we're going to talk about several situations coming up right after that. Again, this is a very strong period for Fulham. In the 10th minute, play off of a corner kick. Eventually, the ball gets to Kostas Stafoulias. His shot just goes wide. Talk about this, David.
Well, this was this is where I was kind of, I was marvelling at Brian Ruiz for a bit, because he actually was doing what we, you know, want him to do. You know, he was linking with the forward play, and, you know, in that whole position where he plays, he'd picked up the ball, saw the keeper off and had a go, and it was a good effort, you know, an excellent effort. And from the corner, surprise, surprise, he actually beat the first man. He put a very good corner in. He actually put two very good corners in on the trot, which is, you know, I've got to give him credit for, because, okay, it maybe it's not the hardest thing in the world, but nevertheless, that's what he's there to do, to be creative and be offensive with his play, you know, to put situations, and it did, and that broke out. And Stafford lead is quite a long way out, actually, but I don't think he's hit it hard, but he's connected with it well. And it's actually been another good save by the keeper. It's, you know, it went behind for a corner again after that. It looked like it might just sneak inside the far post, but he just got down to it, the keeper, and put it behind for the next corner, which obviously I think that was the one where it looked like it may have hit the bar from Ruiz.
Yes. Yes, that one actually hit the bar. And I'm glad that you brought up the fact that Brian Ruiz's corner kicks were much better. I mean, a huge amount better than they have been, David. You know, I've been very critical of his corner kicks, and I know you have as well, and it's been well deserved. But in this match, David, he was spot on.
That's right. I mean, against Bournemouth, he took 5 kicks in a row, which couldn't beat the first man, and that's disgraceful, really. And people, you know, they moan that I mark Ruiz down and say that he's not good enough, but you know, for someone of his supposed talent to not beat the near post 5 times on the trot is disgraceful. But, you know, right. Yesterday, I can't fault his play in the first half an hour. That, you know, he really did link in well. And as I say, his corner kicks were really kind of testing. That's what you want from someone like that. So, yeah, no, full credit to him for that part.
Absolutely, David. And listen, right after that, again, Matt Smith, you know, we're going to talk a good amount about Matt Smith. His header is saved by the keeper. Again, this is a really strong spell by Fulham in the 9th, 10th, and 11th minute. A few minutes later, I would say more than a few minutes later, but in the 18th minute, David, you know, again, I'm going to refresh your memory here. Matt Smith's header is close, but misses to the right, and this is from a free kick from Ross McCormack, who was really spot on his free kicks. Talk about this opportunity. It was only in the 18th minute. You know, again, this is... If you look at the whole microcosm of say, 30 minutes, like you and I have talked offline, this is still a very strong period for Fulham, and this was in the 18th minute, David.
We had I think it was a free kick where, or a ball in where Smith has headed it down and, you know, towards the bottom corner, and the keeper sort of got down low and scrambled it away. And then we've had the other one where he's put it just past the post, really, and it's, he was. He wasn't. They weren't free headers. He was still being challenged, but he's strong, and he's been very, very good in the air, actually, very good. Because sometimes you get big guys aren't as good in the air as they should be. I know this has been maybe something that's been levelled at Dan Burn at the back before, that he doesn't win enough in the air for someone his size. But Matt Smith, he's certainly been prolific so far in the air, and there's been this instant kind of reunion with McCormack, and they seem to really do understand each other's game. And McCormack's obviously a clever player, and he knows where to put it. He's got, you know, enough talent and skill to put the ball more or less where he wants to put it in these situations. And, you know, and on two occasions there, you know, once the keeper's made a good save, and once it's just gone the wrong side of the post. Perhaps he could have done better on that one, really, on the second one.
I was just about to say, I tend to agree with you on that. Maybe this is one of those opportunities that you were talking about at the top of the show, that maybe Matt Smith should have done better. But, okay. All right, David. Now we're going to go a little bit forward to the 31st minute. And I definitely want to get your view on this, because I watched this back a few times on the replay. I wanted to get a good view. It's difficult on the replay. Maybe you got a good view on this live. I'm not sure. But we're going to talk about the goal disallowed here now. Again, 31st minute, Brian Ruiz finds Matt Smith in the box, and his header goes right to Ross McCormack, who puts it in the back of the net, but it's ruled offside. Did you get a good look at this, David?
No, well, I'm at the other end, so I
okay.
saw it clearly, but I can't judge the offside because it's the wrong end from me completely. But it looks, obviously, that Matt Smith has headed the ball back square, or squarish anyway, towards McCormack. So obviously, if he has headed the ball back square, it's going to be quite hard for McCormack to be offside. Obviously, if he's headed the ball forward, then, you know, who knows what happens. But it's one thing I actually noticed that it does rankle with me very, very slightly, that Ross McCormack, for all his skill and everything and understanding of the game, he does seem to get himself caught offside a little bit too much, which is, it's an always annoyance, because you think a clever player like that, you know, will be able to sort of beat the system a little bit and everything. But you know, I haven't even seen a replay on this one, so I can't even say whether it was or not. But from my end, it was impossible to see. But it did look like Matt Smith had headed the ball sort of fairly squarely back. So that does beg the question whether the right decision was made.
Yeah, it's so difficult to tell, David. I think this is fairly close. That's all I'm going to say. You know, from the angle that I saw on the replay, I think you actually did a pretty decent description of it. You know, again, with you being on the other side of the pitch, I think you nailed it, though. You know, again, this was close. But very good point by you about Ross McCormack, because he does get himself offside a decent amount. And if he was just back just a slight bit, this goal probably counts. But, you know, it wasn't meant to be. And then, of course, you know, we are still 0-0 at this point, and Ross McCormack also had an opportunity about 5 minutes later. And then that's going to take us to the header by Tim Hoogland in the 39th minute. Did you get a good look at his header, David?
Well, again, I'm at the far end, so I remember seeing it and thinking, oh, that was, you know, earlier in the season he probably would have buried that one. Because he's, you know, he showed what a good force he could be in the box with his head. So yeah, and I was a bit disappointed at that one. Maybe I'm expecting too much from someone who's a defender, but still, you know, it was another chance, wasn't it?
It was. It was another opportunity. And again, this is in the 39th minute, and you and I probably have already discussed about at least a half a dozen scoring opportunities and one situation that. That was a goal, but, you know, again, was disallowed for offside. Again, there's so much in this first half positive to take away from for Fulham. That's what's so disappointing about what I'm about to share with you and talk about. Because 1 minute later, just 1 minute later, they get the goal. They get the first goal, and basically, as it turns out, the only goal that they needed to win this match. Goal by Sam Byram on a header. Leads the lead. The ball was crossed in the box by Gaetano Berardi after he dispossessed Brian Ruiz. Talk about this whole scenario, David.
Well, we had the ball in the corner. I think we won the ball back in the corner. I'm not sure if it was, Richards probably there in the right back position or someone. He's played it forward and he was in a tight situation. He's gone to Ruiz, and you know, I think Ruiz, in the circumstances, probably should have hoofed it one. But Ruiz has tried to run out with it, and he's not strong enough. He's dispossessed. He ends up on the floor. And for me, it was a fair challenge from what I saw. Ruiz maybe was moaning to say that he thought he'd fouled, but, you know, he's on the floor. They put the cross in. The guy's beaten Stafelidis much too easy at the far post, in my opinion. Bettinelli's rooted to his line. It's possible, because the ball hung in the air a bit, that Bettinelli could have come out and claimed it or punched it as well, but he seemed to be frozen there. Stafelidis was frozen, and so, although, I mean, Ruiz is kind of the main one in my firing line on this one, because you just don't lose the ball in that situation, because that's what happens. I think you have to sort of also question Bettinelli and Stafelidis' role in it as well.
Right. No, listen, very good points by you all around about this whole situation that gives them the lead. I watched it several times, David, and you have some arguments that are justified. It could have been prevented. But Fulham are now down 1-0, and very disappointingly so, because, you know, again, you know, before this, we're talking about all the opportunities that they had. So that's going to take us to the half. Fulham are down 1-0 at the half. And, David, I want to get your thoughts. You and I talked at halftime a little bit, very briefly, but I want to get your thoughts, because I've seen some commentary from some Fulham supporters that believe this is at halftime, that Fulham could score 2-3 goals in the second half and win this game. That's how I felt. I actually felt I felt that Fulham could win this game. I thought they were in trouble because of all the opportunities that unfortunately did not go their way. But I thought they would be able to create more opportunities based on the first half. So just give me how you were feeling going into the second half before the second half began. Did you feel similar to me that not only could we get this match level, but go ahead and win it?
Well, I mean, there's nothing to suggest we couldn't have carried on like that. My question would have been, I guess, the temperament and the minds of the Fulham players, because we have shown this fragility, and you know, we go behind, our heads seem to drop a little bit, and we become very vulnerable, and we make the wrong decisions chasing the game. So my question would be sort of how was their state of mind, and also at half time, we've seen it far too often, unfortunately, that opposition managers have seemed to give better team talks than Kit does, and the opposition seem to write any issues they've had and come out a better stronger team in the second half. And you know, just because you've created loads of chances, there's no guarantee, you know, you are going to create more. But the massive sense of injustice, obviously, at half time. You know, we should never have been losing that game on the balance of play and the chances. No way. I mean, you know, if the end of the match was a robbery, this was, you know, a double robbery, because you know, the first half hour was all Fulham completely, and
right.
Then really after that, Leeds didn't have much of a look in. It was just that, you know, that one opportunity. It was very, very scarce, everything else between that. So, you know, I'm hoping that the Fulham players will sense that injustice to us. Say, hold on a minute, you know, this is ridiculous. We shouldn't be losing this. Let's just go back out and carry on. But,
no,
you know,
very good point.
Fulham,
and, you know...
We have this situation where, you know, one half and, you know, they play two different halves of football completely sometimes.
Right.
And, you know,
no.
Obviously,
no, it's a valid point,
and then,
David.
And then, you know, that aside... We come out and we shot ourselves in the foot at the start of the second half, haven't we?
Absolutely. We're going to go right there, David. We're talking 3 minutes into the second half. They get the second goal by Saul Bamba. David, on another corner kick, talk about this.
Well, unfortunately, I think all the goals have come from crosses and corner kicks again. And on this occasion, I don't know what's happened. The corners... seems to have missed too many people anyway. I don't know if it's got a slight touch at the near post, but it's got right to the far post, and the guy's basically been unmarked to just put it in. And Bettinelli has tried to claw it back, but he's just had no chance. It was all too easy. The marking, just for whatever reason, broke down again. And you know, and also this was, I was going to say, it was a cross that led to the corner kick. It was a cross that Hutchinson just stretched and... just put away for corner kick. It was almost a risk of an own goal, actually.
Right.
Because I think he had to probably do that because he was stopping the ball falling to someone else. But it's across from that side, from their right, our left. He's put it out. Corner. He seems to have evaded everyone at the near post and in the middle, and just, you know, been a free header at the back post, literally.
Yeah. Total free header, David. You know, again, this is a very easy goal for Bamba to score. So Fulham are down 2-0 very early on. And, you know, very disappointing not only to be down one, like we talked about the half. Now you give up an early goal to begin the second half. But the funny thing about it is that if you think about it, like you said, you know, the mentality should have been, you know what? We created so many opportunities in the first half. We can still find a way back in this match. You know, again, that's what would be going through my mind if I was a player. And it's funny because the effort in the second half I thought was actually very good, and we'll talk about that moving forward. So it sounds like to me that they did have that attitude. But unfortunately, we have a situation we have to talk about pretty much only a few minutes after that, and that's with Kostas Stafoulidis, David, getting two yellow cards. The first one for complaining to the, you know, to the ref. That's number one. And the second was, you know, was a challenge that again put, you know, again he was given a second yellow, so that has him being sent off. And that's in the 52nd minute. Talk about this and what And what was going through your mind when you saw this whole situation go down?
Well, the first one, he can't have complaints about. When you go and shout in the face of the assistant referee, you're asking to get a yellow card at least. And if you say anything foul and abusive, you're going to get a red card straight away, because that's what the rules say. So, I mean, there may be some injustice about the decision, but he lost his head on that one. The ref was completely right to give him a yellow card. The second one, I don't think it was the worst challenge in the world. I think, as I said to you last night, it's one of those ones where if you haven't been booked, you probably would get a yellow card. But if you have been booked, you know, it's one of those ways where maybe the ref will give you a final warning. And the thing was, initially watching it in real time, the ref didn't seem that interested. He was just going to give a free kick. And then suddenly, I don't know who, someone said something to him in his earpiece or whatever, he suddenly decided to get the yellow card out. And I'm not really sure why. But you've got to look at Costa Stafford and say it was ridiculous. You've just been booked. You know, it was a silly challenge. It wasn't the worst of the world, but you can't argue that it wasn't a yellow card either. You can't say it's a ridiculous yellow card. Maybe a bit harsh, but it's not a ridiculous yellow card. He's lost his head, and, you know. And you can see Scott Parker before the ref gave the card out, that Scott Parker's telling him to calm down and, you know, get a grip of yourself, because otherwise you will get yourself sent off, but it's too late. So, you know, he's unfortunately you know, cost himself, you know, a place in the rest of the match. He's cost himself a place on Saturday. And, you know, I wouldn't say he's cost us the defeat, because we're already 2-0 down, but he hasn't helped the cause in the slightest.
No, definitely, David. He made it harder. And to his credit, I'm going to read this. This is an apology from Costa Stafelidis that's on the Fulham website. And I told you that this is posted on the website. So I just want to read it and get your thoughts on it. This is, you can actually read this right on FulhamFC.com. Following his dismissal for two yellow cards in quick succession against Leeds United on Wednesday evening, Costa Stafelidis had the following to say. Quote, this is from Stafelidis. I want to apologize for the red card I received on last night's game. I let my emotions get the better of me against Leeds, made the team's challenge to get back in the game even harder. Quote, we did not deserve to lose this match, and I apologize to my manager, my teammates, the club, staff, and supporters for my actions. I'm also sorry that I won't be able to help the team when they go for the win at Huddersfield on Saturday, but want to make the fans aware that I'm committed to helping the team in the remaining matches of the season. Those are quotes from Costa Stafelidis after the match. David, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've said to you that I have a certain amount of cynicism as to whether he did this completely freely, or whether he just, you know, was told he's got to do it, or whether it was written for him. But, you know, what else can you say? I mean, he has, you know, everything that's said in there, whether it is from his heart directly or whether he said it because he's been asked to say that, you can't argue with that it was a ridiculous situation. You always get these situations in football sometimes. You get a ridiculous yellow card for something you should never do, you know, taking your shirt off, celebrating a goal or dissent or something, and then you end up getting a second one for something maybe more serious. And, you know, you've just let yourself down, you've let your team down, you let everybody down. And so, you know, and this is a bit of a problem for us this year. We've picked up quite a few red cards. Now, we're 5 years on from, you know, Roy's team and the Juventus thing. And, you know, remember, we won the Fair Play League, didn't we, with Roy Hodgson, I think it was.
We did.
If I remember rightly. Actually, no, it was... No, I'm going mad. We were close to the top of the Fair Play League with Roy Hodgson. But actually,
it was under Mark Hughes.
Yeah, it was under Mark Hughes we did it. Despite Zoltan Gira trying to, last game of the season, get himself sent off, I think. But we were very, very close, actually. With the... under Roy Hodgson, we also were very close to winning it as well. We almost qualified for Europe the season after the final, but I think, if I remember rightly, England didn't actually make it in the next year. We weren't in the top three countries. But, you know, the point is, we had an excellent disciplinary record at one point, and now it goes hand in hand sometimes. The teams near the bottom do have the worst one. You get more and more desperate. You make rash challenges and bad decisions. And it's just, you know, it's cost everybody, and it's ridiculous. And, you know, it's good he's apologised if it's come from his heart. If it's just stage managed, then I'm afraid I'm a bit cynical. I think, well, you know, it's just all the kind of spin that we get sometimes. But I hope it has genuinely come from him, and he's done it off his own back without having, you know, someone putting a broom handle up his back or something.
See, now, David, the optimist in me, you might have the cynic in you. I have the optimist in me thinks that this is coming from him, and I'm going to tell you why I think it's coming from him. He's a fiery competitor. He made a mistake. He feels that he let everyone down, and he wants to try to make amends for it. He wants to apologize. I actually think this is coming from Stafelidis because he plays, you know, again, he doesn't seem like a player that goes through the motions. He seems like a player that plays with his heart. So, you know, plays hard. And so I think, you know, again, I think this is coming from him. I don't think that this is, you know, someone telling him to say something. I actually think it's coming from him. And after, you know, after the match, and he probably felt really bad. You know, again, he probably felt like he let everyone down. So maybe this is his way of saying, you know what, I'm real sorry about this. So, again, I just want to share that you have your view on it, which is fine, you know, and I have mine. But let's move on. Let's move on to this match. And what's interesting, David, because you and I have talked offline, I've watched many matches this season, unfortunately, Fulham being down a man. And, you know, again, you just brought up in our early past, you know, I'm not really familiar with Fulham playing down with a man so often, but this year it's happened. What's interesting is that they were still going for 2-0 down a man, and they were playing hard throughout the rest of this match. And in a very weird way, I think that they, you know, that was the most dangerous I've seen them this season down a man. Would you agree with that?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think I haven't counted it, but we probably had still at least as many, if not more, goal scoring opportunities than Leeds. I'm sure we had more even when we were down to 10-10. So, you know, although we were a little bit more vulnerable on the break, I suppose, and getting caught, no, we still look pretty dangerous. So we weren't that hampered by it.
No, we weren't. That's what's interesting about this. We really weren't, David. You know, and because, again, watching it back, I was looking to see if Leeds was going to take over at that point, and they really didn't. Fulham still were carrying the play. And the stats are going to kind of back that up because even down a man for pretty much the majority of the second half, Fulham still had around 55% of the overall possession for the match. So that should tell you exactly what was going on there. But I'm going to go to you now again. Stafelidis gets sent off in the 52nd minute. You want a response, right? Well, here's Ryan Tunnicliffe 2 minutes later in the 54th minute. His shot was again saved by Marco Silvestri once again, David. Talk about this opportunity by Tunnicliffe.
Well, I was 50-50 split on this one because the ball's come across and it's fell brilliantly for him in the middle of goal, and I'm thinking that's a bad miss or that's a brilliant save. I mean, the keeper's done very well. He spread himself very well from, you know, to cover that. But you can tell from Ryan Tunnicliffe's reaction that he knows he should have scored, and whether that's because he didn't, you know, bury it or because the keeper's made a great save. That was almost the chance of the game, really, that just the way the ball had fell to someone. He was, you know, 10 yards out, something like that, with literally an open goal because the keeper had been sort of scrambling across. So, no, very, very disappointing we didn't score then because, you know, it really looked like as soon as he was just going to hit it, it was going to be in the back of the net.
Absolutely, David. You know, again, watching that back today, you know, it's interesting the way that you put it, but I'm going to give more credit here to Silvestri. I just think that, like you said, he made himself big, and I think he just made a very good save. And again, he was a huge part of this victory for Leeds because I can't single out anyone else on Leeds except for the goalkeeper, honestly. He really was the difference in this match. That's how I feel about it. But again, that was in the 54th minute. But only about 9 minutes later, we have another opportunity. This is when we start hitting the post, David. Sean Hutchinson, this is a fantastic opportunity, a free kick. Again, a really good one from Ross McCormack. Talk about this, because I thought Fulham definitely have bad luck here because this is another great opportunity for them. Down a man.
Well, this is the perfect these are the perfect kind of deliveries. When you a free kick on our left wing, you take with the right foot, it's curling towards goal. The goalkeeper can't come because any touch is going to divert the force, the flight of the ball. So you can't, you know, it's very, very difficult for the keeper to come out. It's not because the ball's not, it's not like sort of towards him. It's sort of coming in towards him on the arc, and there's all the defenders running in on it. And it's almost, you know, within inches, it's the perfect delivery and the perfect header. He's got the glancing header on it towards the far post, the far corner, and that's exactly, you know, the keeper has no chance on these. And the keeper was just rooted to the spot. But unfortunately, it's just come down, it's hit the post and come back out. Another couple of inches and it would have been in for sure.
Yeah, it's so crazy, David, because again, this is one Fulmer down a man, and they're still creating opportunities. And, you know, they didn't give up. And that's one thing I do want to say about this match. This team down 2-0, down a man, did not give up. They kept going. And, you know, that's going to lead me to now go to the 71st and 73rd minute. These are two opportunities, David, from Matt Smith. And I'm curious your thoughts on both of them. You know, again, he had two attempts to score. What are your thoughts about Matt Smith and these opportunities? Do you remember them?
Well, there was one where Kakalicic has played basically a 1-2 with Tanakliff on the right. Tanakliff's played Kakalicic down the wing. And it's not on his strong foot, but he's managed to get a bit of a drag back on, and it's fallen nicely right into the path of Tanakliff. And he's squared it really for Smith to tap in. But it's on Smith's wrong foot, and he's scuffed it on his right foot. Where, you know, probably on his left foot, or, you know, on his right foot as well, maybe he should have got a better connection and buried it. I don't think the keeper would stand the chance there if he's got a good connection on it. That was one. And there was another one where it was a flighted cross, I think, to the far post, wasn't it? And
yes.
And he's put it the wrong side of the post. I'm not sure which one came first or which second, but that's the two I remember there.
Okay. All right. And, you know, again, we're talking in the 73rd minute, roughly about 15 minutes, you know, a little bit more than 15 minutes to go. And Fulham still are trying to get that first goal and still trying to get back into this match. It just wasn't happening. And unfortunately, David, Leeds are going to get the third and final goal of this match in the 88th minute. This is a goal by Antonucci. And, you know, again, the game was pretty much over at this point. But talk about the third goal for Leeds United.
Obviously, we're pressing forward, so we are always a bit liable to be caught on the break. And this has come on the left-hand side, and Hoogland's gone over there to cover for Stafalidis. He's come out of midfield. And although he was okay, I think he didn't look comfortable playing in the left-back position. And a couple of times the ball's kind of been played inside him, and the guys beat him to it, and he's got to the byline. And he's put in a cross, basically. And I think Bettinelli should have done better with it. You know, okay, the ball wasn't going in at that point, and, you know, you've got to make sure the one thing you don't do is push the ball straight back out into the middle. But unfortunately, that's what Bettinelli's done. He's just sort of parried it straight into the middle. And the lead striker, or the lead guy, he's actually made a hash of it because he's hit it, it's sort of into the ground and gone up, and all the Leeds fans have kind of sighed. You hear them sigh. And then the ball's come back down just under the bar and nestled in the back of the net, and they've cheered. So it's a real miss. It's a real fluky goal, you know.
Yes.
It's not, you know, we've had one at the other end where Matt Smith has mishit it, and it's just gone straight to the keeper. On this one, he's hit it badly, but it's ended up in the back of the net. But, you know, it was a combination of being caught going forward, maybe Hoogland not being comfortable with that position, but Bettinelli just pushing the ball straight into his path as well really was, you know, should have done a bit better there, I think.
Yes, he. You know, again, I agree with you on that. He should have done better, but you know, that puts the match away 3-0, and Kaká had an opportunity in stoppage time, second minute of stoppage time. He hits the post. You know, again, to his credit, we're still trying to score here. You know, not going to win the match, not going to draw. You know, I mean, at least still trying to play. You know, at the very end, and for 90 plus minutes, they were still going for it, and that I have to give him credit for. And fortunately, the result, David, was a very disappointing 3-0 match loss for Fulham Football Club. Very disappointing. And that's going to lead us to move on and talk about the stats, David, because I think the stats are very revealing in this match. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the stats to you, but I'm also, on top of that, going to read the Opta evaluation to you and see with a combination of me reading the stats and the opt-out evaluation, what you get out of the overall picture of all the statistics. So I'm going to go through it right now and then get your thoughts on it. In my section, I call stat attack. Fulham had 55% of the possession of 45 for Leeds. This is the one that is huge. Total shots, Fulham had 27. Leeds only had 8. Shots on target, Fulham had 7. Leeds had 5. Here's the difference. Shooting accuracy, we've already talked about this. Fulham had a shooting accuracy of 26%. Leeds were at 62%, David. Huge difference. Shots blocked. This is an interesting stat, too. They blocked 7 of Fulham's shots. Fulham only blocked 1 of Leeds. Key passes, another very interesting statistic. 18 for Fulham, 4 for Leeds. Passing accuracy, 73% for Fulham, 68% for Leeds. Crosses. Fulham actually had more crosses, David, 24 to 21. Crossing accuracy, much better for Fulham, 33% to 14%. Corners, Fulham had 5, Leeds had 2. Fouls, Fulham had 11, Leeds had 12. Now I'm going to read to you the opta evaluation that you can actually read on the FulhamFC.com website. It just kind of goes along with the stats I just read to you, David. Fulham fans in attendance at Wednesday's meeting with Leeds United will be wondering how the match ended in a 3-0 defeat, and the stats reinforce the Whites' dominance, but also the lack of an end product. In his post-match press conference, Kit Simon said, quote, this is from Kit, we probably had enough chances to win 3 games tonight, but didn't score a single goal. So that needs to change, quote. And with Fulham having 27 shots to Leeds 8, it's hard to argue with our manager's rationale. 2 of those efforts from the home side hit the woodwork when Sean Hutchinson's header came back on the frame of the goal and Alexander Kachanik's shot was pushed onto the same post by United goalkeeper Marco Silvestri. We also hit the crossbar in the first half, although that was not technically a shot as Brian Ruiz's corner cracked against the bar, while Ross McCormack had a goal disallowed for offside. It wouldn't have been unfair on the visitors if Fulham had already been several goals to the good by the time Sam Byram gave them the lead on 40 minutes, but the performance of Silvestri kept the Whites at bay. The Italian pulled off great saves to deny McCormack, Ruiz, Costa Stafelidis, and Matt Smith, all inside the opening 11 minutes of the game. Fulham may have been 2-0 down by the time that Stafelidis was sent off early in the second half, but the youngster's dismissal hardly helped the cause. His first yellow card was for dissent, and second was for a mistimed tackle on Byram. But while there's no doubting it was a free kick, the statistics show that it was the only foul he made in the game. Therefore, it could be considered harsh that referee Chris Kavanagh booked him for his first infringement. Simon said of the second yellow, this is from Kit, quote from Kit, it seemed at first as though the referee was giving a free kick and then moved on from it, but obviously someone was in his ear, and then he changed his mind and went for the second yellow. Quote. Okay, that's from Kit. And replays do show Leeds defender Scott Wooten remonstrating with Kavanagh prior to his brandishing the red card. Further analysis of the opta stats only add weight to the argument that Fulham were on top in this match, with the host enjoying 55% of the possession, delivering 82 more passes with greater accuracy, and playing 18 key passes to Leeds 4. The busiest man on the pitch was Scott Parker, with a Fulham captain unrelenting in his desire to salvage something from the match. The 34-year-old had 78 touches of the ball, put in 11 tackles, made 4 interceptions, played 1 key pass, and had a distribution accuracy of 84%. Pretty impressive stuff on Scott Parker. All right, David, those are the stats and the opta evaluation on top of it. What are your thoughts of the stats in this match?
Well, I think we've covered it a lot already, but the key difference is the economy of opportunities, where Leeds were much, much better, you know, with less chances. You know, they had the majority of their chances on target when we weren't, and we needed to do better because, you know, we've actually had more crosses as well.
Yes.
And unfortunately, on this occasion, it just, you know, Matt Smith and others weren't quite able to capitalize on that. And really, on another day, you know, that those you would have seen a much higher number of those 27 shots being on target. And that's really the key to this, because I don't think, you know, Marco Silvestri could have, you know, stopped everything. He wasn't, you know, he's not Superman. He did very well, but sooner or later we would have got past him. But we just needed to be less wasteful. You know, the yellow card is an interesting debate as well, because I suppose there's this moral argument that you shouldn't be booked for your first, you know, your first foul. But then it depends on the nature of your foul. You know, and it's just because it's the first minute of the game or whatever. You know, people say, oh, you shouldn't be booked, you shouldn't be sent off. But I guess it's the severity of the foul. And I would imagine, you know, maybe the referee saw a player that had lost his head. He's had a rant at the linesman or the assistant referee, and then he's gone and committed a foul. And, you know, and the refs perceived it that way. I'm sure, yes, someone was in his ear, perhaps. And if he's changed his mind because of that, that's very bad, because, you know, the ref has to be independent. But you've seen the foul. I mean, it's not the worst in the world, but you've seen yellow cards given for fouls like that before. It's not a major shock either. So,
it could have gone either way, David.
Yeah, it could have gone either way. I mean, it's unfortunate. I don't think the bearing. It wasn't relevant how many fouls he had already or he hadn't already committed in the game, particularly. As I say, there is what they call persistent infringement, where people can receive a yellow card just for sort of totting up, basically. If they've committed lots of minor fouls throughout the match, the ref will just say to them, right, enough is enough anymore, and it's a yellow card for you. But when a foul is deemed to be more serious, and this one was that kind of thing, it wasn't a minor foul. He has kind of bit lunged in, and you know, maybe the guy's made a meal of it as well. It's one of those, it's where, you know, the refs will give a yellow card sometimes on this occasion. But I think we can't blame that for the reason. That wasn't the reason we lost. I mean, I had Middlesbrough in my ear saying the referee was this and the referee was that and the referee cost us a game, but
no.
I don't think the referee cost us a game. We cost the game ourselves with our wasteful chances and also the goalkeeper helped keep them in the game as well. And we gave the ball away stupidly for their first goal, so we only have ourselves to blame in that respect. But
David. I think you nailed it. You know, again.
That's right. But
I was just about to say, David, really, if, you know, again, I know you have to dial back in. I'm just going to share my thoughts on the stats. And you just dial back in now. But I think you really nailed the situation here. Fulham, you know, again, if you look at the stats, and again, we are talking about the total shots at 27 and Fulham had 7 on target. You know, that's a big part of this. And also, you know, what's interesting looking at this, something that stood out for me was the amount of crosses here. Fulham had 24 to 21. But for me, the big thing here is the shots on target compared to the total shots. You're at 26%, and you need to be doing better. And David's right, though. It's really a combination of us being wasteful and them having a really good goalkeeper doing his job. It's a combination of us not taking advantage of our opportunities, but also some very good goalkeeping from Leeds United. I mean, you have to give Silvestri a good amount of credit here. All right, David, you back?
I am, hopefully.
Okay. Well, you'll be happy to know that I agreed with your analysis there. I do. I totally agree with your analysis of this match. You know, and the stats back it up. The stats really back up everything that we're talking about here. It's frustrating because it's all there for you to look at and analyze, and you're looking at it and saying, how did they lose 3-0? Well, the stats will show you how they lost 3-0. They really will. And, you know, and part of that, you know, part of it has to do with, like you said, it's a combination of Fulham have to look themselves in the mirror and say, you know what, we did not take advantage of our opportunities. And you also have to tip your cap, as we would say here in America, to the goalkeeper and say he did his job as well. So it's a combination of the two. Definitely a combination of the two. All right, David, it's time to rate the players, rate the manager, rate Leeds United. And I definitely want your rating this time on the referee. Okay, so let's start with Marcus Bettinelli. Let's do him by himself. I'm curious your rating for him.
Well, he didn't have a massive amount to do, if you remember, because they only had, what was it, 5 shots on target or something. There were a couple of reasonable claims, but I go back to what I said before. I do question on the first goal whether he could have done better. It wasn't a really bullet cross. It was in the air a bit. Perhaps he could have come and claimed it. Perhaps he could have punched it. But in the end, he just stood there rooted as the ball was put past him. Second goal, I think you've got to look at the defence on that one, really. The corners, he hasn't come for the corner. It wasn't a nice, easy, floaty corner. It did go across quite quickly. He's tried to claw it out. I can't blame him on the second one. Third one, though, he's parried it straight into the path of the player for them to score. Otherwise, apart from that, there was some very poor kicking as well at times. Again, I have to report, unfortunately. Some balls going out of play, some just not getting the dead distance and stuff, clearance on it. So I'm certainly not one of his best games for me. Wasn't terrible, but I'm going to give him 5 out of 10.
Okay. You know, and honestly, David, I think that's a fair analysis of Marcus Bettinelli. He's played better. This is not one of his better matches. There's no question about that. All right, David, we do have a little time this time, so why don't we do the two fullbacks together? Let's do Kostas Stafoulidis, and then on the other side, Jazz Richards. We really have not even really touched on him, so I'm talking about his play in this match. So I'm curious your rating for both of these players.
Well, I was just disappointed with Jazz Richards, actually, because I still haven't seen anything from him particularly that makes me wonder why we've got him ahead of even Grimmer and certainly Hoogland. I know Hoogland, maybe there are question marks about him being a bit cavalier and his defending, but I thought Grimmer had been doing okay. Jazz Richards defended okay, but there's a couple of times that I felt he could have been stronger in the challenge. But going forward is where I really kind of was getting annoyed with him, because there was a couple of times where he got the ball out wide and he had the opportunity to put early crosses in with Matt Smith in the box, and he didn't. He dawdled. And it was, you know, I go mad at Brian Ruiz for holding up play sometimes, and he held up play. There's times when he just really should have been more direct. And how many times did we see Jazz Richards get down the wing and, you know, get crosses in? Hardly ever. So for me, I can't see what he brings to the table particularly, and I think he needs to be a bit stronger. Is that okay? Maybe not in Kai Voser's territory yet, or even Sean Canavan, but no, not good enough for me, I'm afraid, last night, and I'm going to give him 5 out of 10 as well.
Okay.
Stafoulidis would be on a similar vein, that he's frustrating with some of his delivery. He did have a good shot, admittedly, but on the first goal, beaten too easily by their guy, I think, at the back post. So I'm not very happy with that. And then, of course, he's gone and acted very stupidly and got himself sent off. So I'm going to give him 4 out of 10.
I think that's fair on both, David, honestly. And it's funny because Stafoulidis, you know, it's funny. There could be an argument that you could even go lower. But I hear where you're going on that. Giving him a 4 and giving a 5 to Richards. And Richards, you know, it's funny, David, because I'm looking back at this. I couldn't agree with you more. You now have a target man in Matt Smith. Why are you being, you know, again, it's just double-edged sword. We want them to play attractive football. But you know what? You have this weapon right now in Matt Smith who's really doing a nice job. Use him. Get that cross in there. Be more direct if you have to be. Why not? He's there. Use him. Take advantage of his talent. That's his talent. He's right there. Get the crosses in the box instead of wasting some time, like you said, David. I totally agree with you on Jazz Richards on that. And Mike Gregg is probably listening and saying, well, why don't we have Jack Grimmer in there? But you know, and Mike, maybe you have a valid argument, to be honest with you. All right. David, let's talk about the center backs. I'm curious your thoughts on Mr. Turner and Mr. Hutchinson in this match.
I'm sure Yanis will be agreeing with me as well, because I know he's not a fan of Richards coming in ahead of our own players. So, yeah. But centre-backs, well, you know, I thought they were both solid in the main. Although, again, we've conceded goals from corners and crosses. I can't put you know, fault them particularly. I don't think they were outstanding, but, you know, we've let three goals in again once again. But I can't put my finger on particularly anything they did wrong either. Obviously, you know, Hutchinson was very unlucky with that header. It was a good glancing header, should have scored. And had he scored, obviously, I'd probably give him an extra point for it. But I think I'm on the basis that we've let in three goals again through one form or another. They didn't do anything particularly wrong and didn't outstand me either. I'm going to give them both 6 out of 10.
Okay, and I think that's pretty fair there, David. All right, let's move on. Let's move to the midfield. And I'm going to give you Scott Parker and Tim Hoogland. I'm curious your thoughts on Hoogland.
I thought Hoogland actually early on did very well. I mean, it was part of the kind of obviously the trend that we did very well in the first half, and he did show some good energy and stuff. And there were a couple of maybe misplaced passes, but there was also some very good little interplay and touches. So I was quite impressed with him in that sort of role, really, because although he's more of a defensive player, he did offer some support going forward, and, you know, he had that chance to score, of course. Second half was more subdued, and then, of course, he's had to go to play left-back, which didn't look like he was very comfortable there. I almost wondered, because I thought Jazz Richards has played there before, if they didn't swap and Richards go to left and Hoogland go to right back. And there's also the option of maybe of Kavanagh coming on as well, of course, to play in that position. But so I thought it looked a bit uncomfortable second half, and I would partly point the finger at him for the third goal. So I'm going to give him an overall rating of a 6 out of 10 as well.
Okay.
Scott Parker, he was back to being Scott Parker again. I didn't need to hear your stats to tell me that he was all over the pitch. He was throwing himself in. He was trying to win the game single-handedly, bless him. You know, he was being a captain, and at the moment I think he's the best captain we've got. And despite him being 34 years old, we need him in there because he plays with a passion and a fight. And I wish that, you know, it could rub off on everyone else. And in the first half, it was working well. He won some great tackles. Tackles that you shouldn't really be winning, maybe. Tackles where they're not even 50-50, but he's getting there. And a couple of times he got penalised, but in the main, I thought it was an excellent performance by him. And you know, despite, obviously, the way that the match ended up, he's partly responsible for the fact that we were creating things because he was driving everything from the centre of midfield there. So, for me, another captain-like performance and 8 out of 10.
Okay, very good there, Dave. Very good. And I tend to agree with you on Scott Parker. That was definitely a Scott Parker type of match. And he is a leader, man. He is a leader. And it's good to see him lead. Okay. I'm curious your thoughts on Ryan Tunnicliffe and especially Brian Ruiz. Give me your ratings on both.
Tunnicliffe, I thought first half he was a bit quiet. I mean, he's a, you know, I said this last time, he's a 100% player. He does kind of, he gives it all. He's up and down, you know, and he does liken me, I suppose, most to someone like Steve Sidwell, who's, you know, he tries to get stuck in everywhere. But I do see a bit of an accident waiting to happen with him, and I can see him getting a red card before too long because a couple of times he can be a bit rash as well, a bit impetuous. But he has got a lot of energy. It's just perhaps sometimes the final product that he's missing out on, that he doesn't have enough perhaps in other departments. But he definitely, you know, in energy, he's up and down the pitch. He's trying to win the ball and try to be involved all the time. He never shies away. I've got to give him credit for that. I've never seen him shy away from it. He's always trying to be involved. But first half, there wasn't a lot from him, for me. I thought second half, again, he came into his own a bit more. He was unlucky with that opportunity. And, you know, probably should have scored on another day. You know, that interplay as well with Kakalic that created a chance for Smith. So I think I'm gonna give him a Mimi-esque 6.5 because I think it was, you know, a reasonable performance without. I'd like to see a bit more from him still, though.
Okay.
As regards Mr. Ruiz, now I'm sitting there thinking, oh my God, I'm gonna have to give him a big score here because he started really well. He started so well. You know, he had great interplay. He actually made some positive movement forward with the ball, some good efforts. You know, the delivery on the corners was good. The shot was good. I'm thinking, you know, we're on an 8 out of 10 here for Mr. Ruiz so far, if he can maintain this the whole game. Unfortunately, he didn't, though. So he did seem to fade a little bit after that initial spell, and second half most certainly he'd faded as well. So I've had to drop him down to 7 now. But alas, you know, and I take no pleasure in this really. His losing the ball in a silly position did lead to the decline, unfortunately, in the first goal. So I'm going to knock another one off as well. So I'm only going to give Mr. Ruiz 6, unfortunately. You know, maybe that's a bit harsh the way he started, but he did start the decline and he did fade quite badly, I thought.
Okay, not a problem there, David. I do want to mention this. You know, again, I just happened to see this come over. You probably are aware of this, but there was an announcement on the Fulham Football Club Twitter account that Marcus Bettinelli has been named to the England Under-21 squad for their upcoming games against the Czech Republic and Germany. Congratulations to Marcus Bettinelli. He actually deserves it, David. What are your thoughts on that real quick?
No, I'm really pleased for him, you know. That's great. It's strange that probably in the last couple of weeks we haven't seen the best out of him compared to probably before that. But, no, I'm pleased for him because, you know, I think he's got a lot of potential to be a good goalkeeper, and he's very, very young in goalkeeping terms. So it's good that he's getting that recognition. And, you know, let's hope that he can, you know, learn and build upon the positive side that we've seen on him, you know, because he's been done some great things for Fulham this year. He's kept us in some games. His shot stopping has been fantastic, and he's also dominated his area quite well. So if he can work on those and develop those games, yeah, great goalkeeper, and he has got the potential to be involved with the England setup, I think, in the future.
Absolutely. That's why I think this is a win-win. It's a win-win for England, win-win for Marcus Bettinelli, and a win-win for Fulham. And I think this is great for him. I think he deserves it. So congratulations to Marcus Bettinelli. I really think this is a good thing, David. And I think the best is only to come from that guy. I think, you know, again, I think he's just in his infancy of being a goalkeeper. So very good thing for Marcus Bettinelli. All right, let's get back to rating the players. Let's talk about the guys up front. Ross McCormack, who came off injured. No update yet on the injury to Ross McCormack. Just wanted to mention that, but he did come off late in the match. And then also, give me a rating for McCormack and also for Matt Smith.
Well, they showed a great partnership again at times, and, you know, they were both pretty busy and they caused a lot of problems. I mean, I think, you know, it was Matt Smith really who caused more problems than it was with Ross McCormack. I mean, Ross McCormack tended to be more instrumental in sort of putting the ball on the plate for Matt Smith. But McCormack, there was some, you know, the free kicks, good delivery from free kicks. There was some good play and everything, and, you know, he didn't have that many chances to score himself. But we did see a couple of kind of mad moments from him again, and there was one in the second half, and I know the match was lost, but all he had to do was put the ball in the head for Matt Smith. And he did put the ball in the head for Matt Smith, but he put it on there about 300 mile an hour, rather than just, you know, little chipped ball into the far post. He absolutely blasted it in frustration, which annoyed me a little bit. But I think that, you know, he seemed to be up for the game. On another day, you know, his free kicks would have led to goals from headers, and also he could have scored himself on that very close decision. And there was another chance, the one where Matt Smith actually scuffed into the goalkeeper. Had he allowed to run, you know, McCormack was clearly unmarked at the far post, so he could have scored there. So I can't hold too much against him. I think I'm going to give him, again, another 6.5 out of 10 because I think he was busy, but he needed to make maybe better choices on some occasions. Matt Smith, now, you know, I have to apply Brian Ruiz's formula to this one. I thought Matt Smith, you know, was very dangerous. You know, and I think he's been a great asset to Fulham since he's been back. You know, he's got himself in scoring positions. He's created chances and always had chances created. And we've looked a much more dangerous team with him playing up front. Maybe it's more of a Hugo formula than the Ruiz one. But I'm only going to give him 6 out of 10 because although he was dangerous and looked good, he really needs to be converting more of those chances from last night. And, you know, obviously that was one of the main fundamental reasons we didn't win the game, because, you know, we didn't put the ball in the back of the net. And on some occasions, he should have done better.
Okay. Fair enough there, David. All right, good stuff on the starting 11. Let's see. I don't want to rate Seiko Fofana, but what about Kaká? He came on in the 63rd minute.
Well, it was a little bit of a strange substitution for me, because I thought with Ruiz perhaps fading and going off, they might actually use that opportunity to bring on, to make a change to the shape or do something to counteract it. But in fact, Kaká, whereas Ruiz had been quite central, Kaká kind of went more right, really. I actually did think at that stage they might bring on Fofana. I thought, Kaká, he had a couple of good runs. I'm never sure when he plays a bit on the right because he's not that strong on his right foot. But he did have that cross he pulled back, really, and, he could have scored from. He had the shot, of course, that was tipped onto the post. And I thought it was generally positive, but I'm not sure if it was quite the right move, really. But I can't say he did particularly anything wrong, so I'm going to give him 6.5 out of 10 as well. I mean, Fofana, no, we won't rate him, but for me, that was a really weird substitution. Ruiz, who's kind of a cam, had already gone off, who was playing central, and he was playing behind Matt Smith. And we'd lost McCormack to injury. And then so what did we do? We got two strikers on the bench and we bring on Fofana. And much as I like to see Fofana, Matt Smith was then left completely isolated up front. So he was then having the ball in the air to him to flick on and knock down, and there was no one there. And so it was a really strange decision, that one, a really weird substitution, because the logic would have been to put Corley there or even Hugo there to play off Matt
right.
Smith. Losing a striker. We're still chasing the game technically. So for Fofana, I don't think he did anything wrong and he wasn't on for long, but it was a really weird substitution for me.
Okay. Fair enough there, David. All right. It's time to re-kit.
How much can you blame Kit for the sendings off? How much can you blame Kit for his, missing chances? You can't really blame me for either of those. Not really. The only thing you can blame Kit for is perhaps, still not quite all getting the defence organised. As a defender himself, you'd expect better organisation in defence, perhaps better motivation. Team selection-wise, I don't know. Chaz Richards is still a bit of a query for me. Otherwise, it was kind of what you would expect, but we still have this issue about the diamond once again. We were strong in the middle, but again, we've conceded three goals from kind of wide positions, more or less. But I'm not going to be too harsh on Kit, because the only thing I can, say really that was terrible was, that Fofana sub at the end was strange. The Kaká one, I'm not sure about. Some people say it's okay, some people maybe not. Jazz Richards, not still sure about just the general him being at the club. But I think I'm going to give Kit 6 out of 10 because most of the issues were not down to him. It was down to what happened on the pitch.
I agree with that. I actually would rate him a little bit higher, but I understand where you're going on this, David. It's a conundrum because, again, most fans, are looking at Kit right now. I don't think this is a match we can really point the finger at Kit, David. That's just my opinion. If you want overall, by all means, feel free to if that's where you want to go. But this match, David, I don't know if you can really blame Kit too much on this. I think he set us up okay. And like you said, the one strange thing might have been the Fofana substitution, but that was late. That was very late. So, no, good stuff. All right, David, I'm very curious your rating for Leeds. Let me just start by saying I hope it's not too high because I don't think they deserve it to be too high.
Well, you'd look at a team that's put in a reasonable shift and everything, and you'd say, well, it's a 6 out of 10 or 7 out of 10 maybe. And you look at a team that's like taking their chances, and that's what you're there to do. You've got to take your chances, and the chances were given to them. First, we handed the first one to them on the plate, and then we've, shot ourselves in the foot with the corner, and giving away the corner, and Stafford's getting himself sent off, leaving ourselves a man down. So all they've done is just taken the chances given to them. So they've done exactly what you'd expect a team to do, really. And they've got off a bit lightly, but I think you've got to say it's a 7 out of 10 because they've been the professional team. They've been, they've done what you needed to do. I wouldn't say it was better than 7 out of 10 because they didn't do enough to excite me, but they did everything they had to do. They kept the ball out, and you've got to give, out of those 7 out of 10, most of those you could give to the keeper, probably, I think, because he's kept them in it. And exactly what you want to do from a snatch and grab game, you keep the other team out, and then when you get the chance to score, you go and take it. So you can't be critical of them, but you know, it wasn't due to kind of brilliant play they won it. They just did their job, you know. They were organized.
They did their job. That's a good way to put it, David. It's funny because you were, you know, you made a very strong argument for them because I'm thinking much lower. But I think you made an argument why you gave them a 7. I still would have gone lower, but I see where you're going on this because they did their job. They did it well, took advantage of their opportunities with smash and grab. They did everything that they needed to do to win. So on that basis, they deserve a 7. But if you're looking at their overall play, like you said, play, you know, I don't think it was 7 worthy, but I understand why you gave it a 7. It that does make sense. Okay, the referee. Curious your thoughts on the referee. We haven't had the opportunity lately to get to the referee, but since it's just me and you, we've had some extra time. So share with me your thoughts on the referee.
Well, just say on the last one, if we were rating the Leeds players, you'd be giving the Leeds keeper 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 probably.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Oh, absolutely, David. Listen, Silvestri, 9, 9.5, maybe even 10. I agree with you on that.
So, you know, they've been organised and they've kept us out one way or another, and so, you know, I can't be too critical of them. As for the ref, you know, I don't think the ref did a lot wrong. Obviously, people will question the decisions for the yellow cards, but, you know, as a referee, I think your first job is always to protect and to, you know, to work with your assistants. And if your assistant gets a player mouthing off in his face or whatever, you're going to give a yellow card for dissent because that's what it says. The sort of mandatory cards that should have been given were given. There was another one, and I thought this was excellent actually from him. In the second half, when we were chasing the game, Bettinelli tried to clear the ball out, and someone's, you know, hindered him. And he's about to blow the whistle, the ref, and he saw that we broke away, and he's waved on play, and then he's gone and booked the guy afterwards because that's a mandatory yellow card when you interfere with a goalkeeper when he's releasing the ball. So things like that were excellent, and you know, he did try and play the advantage quite well. He did allow some robust challenges. You know, Scott Park was going in there, and he was allowing him to win the ball. So I don't think the ref was awful. All you'd have to say is that whether he kind of overreacted a bit on the second yellow card, and I think, you know, he could have been more lenient. He could have got staff leaders and called over, obviously, Scott Parker, the captain, and staff leader said, right, you know, this is it. Calm yourself down now or you're going to be taking an early bath. But I don't think, you know, when you look at it otherwise, were there many wrong decisions? I don't know. Offside, he's reliant on his linesman to give that decision there. So you can't, if that one wasn't offside, you can't blame him too much for because he doesn't have a better view than the linesman. I wasn't unhappy particularly with any other decisions, not massively. It's just, you know, the fact that the second yellow card, you could say, was a bit harsh. But to the letter of the law, he was doing what he should be doing. So, you know, I'm going to give him 7 out of 10 because I saw some, you know, a good young referee there coming up who was prepared to make bold decisions. And he also did try to allow the game to flow wherever possible. And in this case, it didn't work for us because we were on the receiving end of a red card. But I think to say that the referee was bad or, you know, cost us a game, it would be sour grapes. Just in the same way, really, if you say Leeds were awful and give them a low score, it'd be sour grapes because, you know, they took advantage of their luck. You know, they rode it out. And I don't think the ref was so awful. So 7 out of 10.
Okay. No, listen, fair enough, David. I thought Mr. Kavanaugh was fair. You know, again, we go back and forth about the second yellow, but that could have gone either way. All right, David. Wow, this show really flowed very well and flew by. I was going to say flowed and flew. It really flew by, my friend. Excellent job, my friend. I hope you enjoyed doing this with me today.
I am. I'm hoping you're going to do Yanis's rant still. I'm looking forward to that.
I never received it. I actually never received his rant. So.
Oh, no.
Let me just double check before we go, but I don't think I've ever received Giannis's rant. So you know, but I do know for a fact that Giannis did want to do a good old fashioned rant, but hopefully he will the next time he's on the show, David. And you and I and Mike Gregg will be back tomorrow to preview a huge match, David. Huddersfield Town. Just real quickly, what are your thoughts going into this match?
well, you know, every time we have a defeat now, things like this are more and more must win. I mean, Huddersfield aren't a million miles from us in the table. We need to be getting points off anyone who's around us. Obviously, the, you know, the Wigan and the Rotherham matches are going to be bigger still, but we've got to try and see if we can nick something here. And it's about, you know, obviously if we can win, it's fine, but otherwise we're looking at what everyone else is going to be doing. And so it'd be interesting to see what, you know, what Kit tries to do to shake things up. You know, maybe he doesn't need to shake too much up, because at the end of the day, we put in a performance which was good enough to win the game. But away from home is a different kettle of fish sometimes. You know, will Brian Ruiz be back? What's he going to do at left back? Is it going to be Amar Bieta coming back in? Is it going to be even Kavanagh coming in? Is he going to change the system? What's he going to do? So we obviously lots to talk about tomorrow, and hopefully once we've heard Kit's presser, it might give us a few clues as well. But, you know, we are unfortunately getting into a scenario where games are becoming must-win games, and, you know, there are people, you know, I'm sure you've seen them all, saying that if we don't win on Saturday, it's going to be goodbye Kit. But we've been hearing that for a few weeks now, and I don't think they're going to jump that quickly, to be honest with you.
I don't either, David. You know, listen, I understand why people want the manager gone. I get it. You know, again, you're looking for someone to blame. You know, you're looking at what's happened recently with the results. I get it. I understand it. I just want people to remember what we did the last time we were struggling and we were looking at a relegation fight, and we went with Felix McGath. And, you know, looking back at it, David, that was a horrible decision. And I don't, you know, again, this is just, I don't have any information on this. Just my gut says Kit Simons will be the full manager until the summer. And then after that, I don't know. But I think I don't see them making a change. I just don't. But, you know, we'll see what happens, David. But we certainly have plenty to discuss tomorrow. And in case anyone's wondering, what we're going to have coming up, they actually are at home on Saturday, because people are going to be watching, you know, watching the results. And Wigan do play at home against Bolton. So that's one to be a little worried about, because that is a winnable match for Wigan. So just keep that in mind, because we will be watching these matches. And tomorrow, David, I will be going through the rest of the schedule for Wigan. We'll definitely go through that compared to Fulham's schedule and see how many wins you think that they could get out of their last 8 matches, because there are a few, and the first one is coming up against Bolton. So we'll talk about that tomorrow.
Well, the worrying thing for us is that if we play like that and create as many chances like that and don't win, you know, how many more games can we win this season? Because that is a real kick in the teeth, isn't it? It's a real kick in the teeth, and that's going to be hard.
It is, David, but there are two ways to look at it. And I hear what you're saying. If we play like that and don't – but that also gives me hope that they can play like that, and that eventually your luck will turn. That's the way you know, again, it's just our different personalities coming out. You're glass half empty, I'm glass half full. So I think that the other side is going to come, meaning the positive side is going to come. But we'll see. Very interesting point. You know, you get the very different takes from you and me, because we're coming at it, we're both fans, but we're coming at it looking at it from a different perspective, which is fun to do, and I appreciate where you come from. I definitely do, my friend. But let's wrap up the show a couple of minutes early. But again, great show, my friend. You were great, and I do want to make one recommendation to you before we go. And you haven't done this since, David. Do you know what I'm going to recommend to you?
I do my Brian Clough impressions again.
No. Definitely don't want any Brian Clough impressions. What I want you to consider doing is your sequel. I want you to do a sequel. Do you know what I mean by that?
You want me to write another article?
Yes, I want you to write another article. Your first article was excellent, David. You have great things to share when it comes to writing it down. I want to encourage you to write another article and more after that, because you're talented, my friend. You need to be writing more articles.
It's quite hard to beat that one. I must say that if you Google Brian Ruiz, Kit Simons, it still appears there on the first page of Google. My article is still there.
I'm just telling you, David. I got to see how many people read your article, and it was a huge amount. And it's valid why so many people read it, because your take was very interesting, and I think you need to consider your sequel.
I'm still getting the abuse from Costa Rica occasionally, so yeah, I get the occasional tweet. Obviously, I think it's bad enough getting abuse from people who think I don't like Brian Ruiz from Fulham, but from Costa Rica it's even worse. But yeah, no, it's just hard for me.
Oh boy, I can imagine, David. All right, well, listen,
it was a good article. I think I felt it came out. I got my point over. I guess it's just, you know, I don't want the second one to be. I don't want it to be a quantum of solace to Casino Royale. You know what I mean? A disappointment.
Totally hear you. It's difficult. I hear you because you just actually brought up a great analogy for Daniel Craig Bond movies, because Casino Royale was excellent. Quantum of Solace was terrible. So yes, I get that. But there's only one way that you can do to find out, David. You could have a Godfather and Godfather 2. I mean, it does happen. Godfather Part 2.
Skyfall,
so.
On that analogy. Skyfall.
Or Skyfall, right. Or you
Skyfall.
Or you could have a Skyfall. You know what?
Right.
We better stop talking James Bond until this summer, because we are going to have a complete James Bond episode. I'm looking forward to doing that. All right, but listen, let's wrap up the show. And just want to mention, David, myself, and Mike Gregg will be back tomorrow to preview the Huddersfield Town match. I'm looking forward to doing that with you. You and Mike, look forward to talking to Mike. Unfortunately, Mike couldn't join us tonight. He had to work late, and Giannis had something come up at the last minute. But thankfully, David, you were able to come in and stand in for them, and you did an excellent job. But it's time to say goodbye. So time to wrap this up. Great episode. For David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, David.
Cheers, Russ. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Come down.